Radio Prague News.
Speaking as president of the EU, the Czech prime minister says if gas supplies from Russia are not resumed by Thursday, the EU will have to intervene more firmly in the dispute. Members of the European Commission are in Prague for the first major events of the Czech presidency of the EU. And the Czech EU presidency has said it's deeply concerned by the rising number of civilian casualties in Gaza. Speaking as president of the European Union, the Czech Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek has said that if natural gas supplies from Russia are not resumed by Thursday, then the EU will have to intervene more firmly in the dispute. Mr. Topolánek told reporters that there was still a chance agreement could be reached between the Russian gas giant Gazprom and the Ukrainian company Naftogaz. He said, however, that if no deal was agreed, the debate would have to be raised to a higher political level. The Czech Republic was one of many countries in Europe hit by Russia's complete halting of natural gas supplies via pipelines in Ukraine on Tuesday night. The Czech Republic normally receives close to 80% of its gas from Russia. A spokesperson for the country's biggest gas supplier, RWE Transgas, said it had reserves equivalent to 40 days' supply. The company has also moved to increase imports from Norway and to buy gas from Germany. Members of the European Commission have arrived in Prague for the first major events of the six-month Czech presidency of the EU. The commissioners are holding meetings with Czech ministers, while the president of the European Commission, Josep Barroso, is having talks with the Czech Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek and the Czech president, Václav Klaus. The gas crisis and the conflict in the Middle East are expected to dominate Wednesday's meetings, several of which are taking place on Prague's Kampa Island. In the evening, the European Commissioners will attend a gala evening at Prague's National Theatre, celebrating the launch of the Czech presidency. And the Czech EU presidency has said it's deeply concerned by the rising number of civilian casualties in Gaza and called on Israel to open a humanitarian corridor on both sides to implement a ceasefire. The Czech Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg, who led a high-level EU fact-finding mission to the Middle East, says the EU will persist in its efforts to bring about a truce, although brokering peace in the region has not proved easy. Mr. Schwarzenberg said he remained optimistic that a ceasefire would be arranged between Hamas, which controls the Gaza Strip, and Israel, which launched an offensive against the territory 11 days ago. However, the Czech foreign minister said reaching a truce would take a while longer. The Czech Senate has postponed debating ratification of the EU's Lisbon Treaty until the middle of February. A proposal to that end was submitted by senators from the Civic Democrats and approved by the Upper House's Foreign Affairs Committee on Wednesday. The Czech Republic's lower house, the Chamber of Deputies, is expected to begin debating Lisbon in a session beginning on February 3rd, with that issue likely to be linked to a vote on a planned US radar base in central Bohemia. The weather should get slightly warmer in the next few days, though temperatures are not expected to exceed minus 4 degrees Celsius. We can expect sunny spells in many parts of the country. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Danielle Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, Russia halts natural gas deliveries to Europe. What is behind the move and what are the chances of averting a serious energy crisis? A government reshuffle that was announced in late October. Why is it so difficult for the Czech Prime Minister to make a move? And apple cake with vanilla ice cream. Czechs deliver on their promise to make life sweet for the European Union. What else are EU representatives being treated to in Prague? All that and more coming your way, so please do stay with us. Early on Wednesday, Russian supplies of natural gas to Europe were completely cut off as a pricing and debt row between Russia and Ukraine escalated. Several European countries more dependent on Russian gas than the Czech Republic have found themselves in deep trouble, amongst them Slovakia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Macedonia, Croatia, Hungary and Greece. Worst hit appears to be Serbia, which has declared its situation to be critical. Dominic Yoon spoke with Aldrich Buresh, an expert on Russian affairs, and began by asking him to comment on what he believes is behind this cutoff.
Well, it's difficult to dissect where exactly is the truth. It's difficult to say whether Ukrainians are really stealing all of the gas or whether the Russians are not sending any gas. Obviously, now when there is no gas flowing, the Russians must have turned the gas supply completely off. So that's clear. Otherwise, yes, I would say both Czech Republic and Europe are sort of taken hostage by a dispute between Ukraine and Russia about gas prices, but also essentially, I would say there is always politics involved and the disputes in Ukraine, whether it should be leaning more pro-Russia or pro-Western, is obviously hidden behind what is essentially a commercial dispute.
So it's unclear whether it's Russia that switched off the gas or Ukraine, is that right? So Russia hasn't made an official pronouncement as to whether it is responsible for this?
Since there is no gas flowing anymore, I assume that Russia must have turned gas completely off. So I think now it's obvious, even though I haven't read anything in the news, that the Russians would officially admit to that. Before, as long as there was at least some gas flowing, there was always a possibility for the Russians to blame on the Ukrainians that they are simply siphoning off on the gas that was dedicated or designed for Europe and that they were simply stealing the gas, which the Ukrainians would always deny. So until yesterday it was difficult to say. I think now it's obviously clear that Russia has simply turned off the pipeline.
So what can the Russian objectives be here? Obviously there's anger in Europe and it would seem that they're alienating Europeans further by doing this.
Well, the official explanation is obviously Ukraine has not agreed on the new contract where the Russians wanted to increase the price and therefore they simply decided that since there is no contract, they should be paying the market price, which Ukraine has refused, and therefore the Russians refused to send gas to Ukraine. It's also true that Ukraine in general, even when they had the agreement, were paying late, so they have substantial debt. Otherwise, I would always say that with the relations of Ukraine and Russia, it's internal politics in Ukraine and politics in Moscow. That is the future orientation of a country which is a former Soviet republic and one of the biggest former Soviet republics. So Russia has substantial interest in keeping in more pro-Russian than it used to be, say, since the Orange Revolution.
And Slovakia has lodged a formal protest to Moscow, and also the Czech president, Václav Klaus, is set to meet with the Russian ambassador. So what kind of leverage do the Czechs have, for example, in this matter?
Well, the Czechs now have the leverage of holding the EU presidency. So they do have substantial leverage if they can use or speak on behalf of Europe. The problem with this leverage is that for a long time, Europe has failed to have a united security policy or energy security policy. And indeed, if Europe sort of acted in concert, since it's such a big market for the Russian gas that it cannot afford to lose, obviously they would have a strong voice. But even these days we can see clearly that the Balkans are very hit and they have basically no gas. Slovakia is substantially hit. Czech Republic a little bit more, but then the farther west we go, the less, let's say, immediate concern there is. So while there is solidarity, there is not that sense of urgency. So it may be now pushing the EU to definitely, in the long run, consider alternative pipelines, but still we can see it will be difficult, as it used to be, to have a common united front. But otherwise, for the Czech Republic, I think, yes, we should take advantage of the fact that we are in the presidency. One of the priorities is energy security, so we should make the most out of it and try to use the leverage against Russia as much as we can.
Aldrich Buresh there, an expert on Russian affairs, speaking to Dominic Yoon. Now, a cabinet reshuffle planned by Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek has threatened to further undermine the country's weak government only days after the Czech Republic took up the EU presidency. At the centre of the dispute, the Prime Minister's intention to replace controversial Christian Democrat leader Jiří Čunek as the Minister for Regional Development. Making such a change will be difficult. On Tuesday, a majority of Christian Democrats backed their leader and threw Mr. Topolánek a loop, recommending that he dismiss the country's finance minister, a close ally, instead. Now he and the Christian Democrats are at loggerheads. Jan Wellinger has the details.
A cabinet reshuffle has been on the cards ever since the coalition's humiliating defeat in October's regional and Senate elections. After months of speculation as to who would leave the Topolánek government, the Prime Minister finally promised action, saying that he would propose a radical shake-up affecting all three ruling parties. Details of the reshuffle were to have been announced on Monday, but were delayed after the leaders of two smaller parties asked for extra time to debate the proposed changes with their party leaderships. Since then, it has become clear just how small the Prime Minister's maneuvering space really is, and how difficult it is for him to replace major players like Christian Democrat leader Jiří Čunek. Political analyst Vladimíra Dvořáková explains.
The Prime Minister just now is in a very difficult situation, and it's very difficult to explain why he did such steps or why he has taken some decisions. This is unbelievable. You know, that's something like that you can do in the moment when there is a beginning of the Czech presidency. And the first days of the presidency is, you know, very, very deep internal crisis in the cabinet. There is a risk that if he would ask the chair of the Christian Democratic Party, Mr. Čunek, to leave cabinet, the whole Christian Democratic Party would leave the cabinet, and the position of the cabinet would be even lower than is before, and with probability that there can be vote of no confidence to the cabinet.
To say the Prime Minister's move against Mr. Čunek at a time when the government is so demonstrably weak is a poor choice of timing is an understatement, and many Christian Democrats know it. On Tuesday, they responded, albeit by a slim majority, in defense of their leader by suggesting that Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek be replaced instead. Although Mr. Kalousek, too, is a Christian Democrat, he is a key Topolánek ally with close sympathies to the Civic Democratic Party. The Prime Minister promptly came out in his defense, making clear that the Finance Minister was staying or that there would be no government.
My government will either be a lineup that I propose with Mr. Kalousek, or it won't exist. We are heading for a situation which will not be at all easy. If I am to guarantee success regarding the economy, it is far more important that I have a minister who serves the country's citizens than his party alone. Miroslav Kalousek fits that bill.
Legally, the Prime Minister has the final word on nominations to the cabinet. But in this case, he is bound by a political agreement to seek approval from his coalition partners. As a result, some now expect Mr. Topolánek will have little choice but ultimately to budge, leaving the option of no changes, either major or cosmetic. Vladimíra Dvořáková again.
Because the Christian Democracy would not accept the proposals of Mr. Topolánek for the changes in his cabinet, Mr. Topolánek, after all, would say that there would be no changes in the cabinet at all.
The broader leadership of the Christian Democratic Party is to address the situation with its leader and Mr. Kalousek further and to reach a final decision on Friday. The Prime Minister has meanwhile scheduled a final announcement on the reshuffle for January the 12th.
My thanks to Jan Wellinger for that report, and of course we'll be following developments as regards that planned government reshuffle. Now, although the Czech Republic officially assumed the EU presidency on the first day of 2009, official celebrations marking the launch of the presidency have been scheduled for Wednesday, January the 7th. Who will be attending the celebrations and what exactly is on the agenda? Ruth Frankova has more.
A delegation of EU officials headed by President of the European Commission José Manuel Barroso landed at Prague's Ruzyně Airport at midday on Wednesday for 24 hours packed with meetings and cultural events. I spoke to Jana Urbánková from the government's office, who is responsible for coordinating the official program just as she was heading for the airport, and asked her to briefly outline Wednesday's schedule.
So the day starts with a common lunch with the government officials in the Mlíny Museum Kampa, which is in Lesser town.
What is on the menu?
The cuisine is Czech, so we didn't orient ourselves to international cuisine, so we want to offer them Czech cuisine. And then they will move to Liechtenstein, Paris, where they will have meetings in clusters according to their agenda, commissioners and members of our government speaking for 1 hour about matters concerning our priorities and about the actual political situation in Europe and in the world.
Are you planning special security measures?
Yes, there are security measures concerning the move, especially of the President of the European Commission, and there will be security measures on the way from the airport to the center of the city and in the evening around National Theatre, where the official opening ceremony of the Czech presidency starts.
How will that affect people who live in Prague?
We hope that not much, so we try to do everything what is necessary, not more.
While members of the EU delegation were enjoying a lunch consisting of goulash soup, guinea fowl with mashed potatoes and spinach, rounded off with apple and rhubarb cake with vanilla ice cream, the National Theatre in Prague was busy making final preparations for the gala evening, conceived by the Forman brothers, the sons of film director Miloš Forman. Just before the start of the dress rehearsal, producer Lida Vackova unveiled details of the program. The evening will start off with a well-known Czech actor and singer Jiří Suchý taking over the EU presidency from the hands of a well-known Czech-French personality, though I can't reveal just now who that is. That will be followed by some lesser-known pieces by famous Czech composers and selected sketches, both by the Forman brothers and the National Theatre. We want to present current Czech authors, artists and set designers, and also to introduce young artists who we think really represent the new European generation. The opening ceremony will be attended by the crème de la crème of Czech society, politicians, diplomats, cultural figures and church dignitaries. Among those present will be the former Czech president Václav Havel. The current president Václav Klaus, on the other hand, has already made it clear that he won't be coming. Although he gave no particular reason for his absence, most people will probably see it as his first public boycott of the EU presidency.
My thanks to Ruth Frankova. And Ruth will now leave the world of politics and take you to the town of Jilemnice. The spotlight is on the cradle of Czech skiing.
It is early on a Friday morning. The air is freezing and there is no sign of the sun in the sky. Yet the creaky old Karosa bus heading towards Krkonoše or Giant Mountains is almost full when I arrive at the bus station. Many people from Prague have taken their day off in order to enjoy some snow. Unlike most of my fellow travellers, I'm not heading towards the ski slopes and racing tracks. My destination is the little town of Jilemnice, crouching at the foothills of the Giant Mountains in North Bohemia. Jilemnice was one of the very first skiing centres in the country, and it proudly calls itself the cradle of Czech skiing. Petra Pohunková from the local town hall has promised to give me a tour through the town. We meet on the central square, right in front of the town hall building.
Probably the most interesting and most visible building is town hall, which was built in 18th century. It was also in the period of Haraks here, the period when Haraks came to Jilemnice. It used to be smaller and it didn't have this tower, and there also was not the clock which is there now. Some years after the building was built, they rebuilt the building and they added the tower to the building and they added the clock. The clock is one of the most interesting in Middle Europe. It's because of the number of strikes, which is 1020 in the day. Then there are some other brick buildings which replaced the former buildings, which were only timber or wooden. The buildings were rebuilt after fires. There were many fires in Jilemnice. One of them was caused by warriors' suites in 18th century. But there were three other fires which were in 1883 and two other years, I don't remember. And in these years, the timber buildings were completely burned. So people had to rebuild their town. And because they knew what the timber is like during the fire, they built the buildings from bricks and stone.
Not everybody could offer bricks, though, and you can still find some lovely wooden houses in Jelenice. The most beautiful street, consisting almost entirely of traditional log cabins, is called Zviedava, or Curious Street. I wondered where its name came from.
It's probably because of the shape of the street, or because of how the buildings, how the houses are placed on their plots. The street is not narrow, and on the right side, if you look up the hill, from each of the buildings, we can see one window. So people from each of the buildings could look out of this window in the direction to the center.
We walk through the tiny street and up the hill towards the local cemetery, which is overlooking the entire town.
Okay, so we are now standing at a cemetery which is built on a hill. It's very windy here and the snow started falling. It's quite cold and we are standing at a grave of one of the most famous people who was from Jelenice.
Bohumil Hanč, I think he was not born in Jelenice, he was born in Benecko, but he lived here. And it was one of the best known skiers, maybe of the whole Republic or Bohemia those times. Oh, he became famous because of his death, if you can say it like this. And he died during the ski contest for 50 kilometers, which was held on Krkonoše Mountains. And he died because of very bad weather and snowstorm. And he died there with his best friend, Vrbata, who tried to help him, who gave him his jacket. And people who were looking for Hanč didn't know that also Vrbata is there on the place. So they didn't help Vrbata, only Hanč. But even if they helped Hanč, it was already too late to save his life.
Numb with cold, I hurried to the local museum, the Krkonošské muzeum, which is devoted to the history of the region and to the origin of skiing. As I slowly thawed out over a cup of tea, the museum's director and historian Jan Luštinec tells me about the town's history.
Jelenice is the gateway to the western part of the giant mountains. It was founded as a center of the vast domain of the Wallensteins, who owned the whole of the West Giant Mountains and their foothills.
Jelenice saw one of its greatest periods during the 18th century under the rule of the Earls of Harach, when the linen industry expanded. A second significant period was the second half of the 19th century, when there was an expansion of the tourist industry.
This was due to Earl Jan Harach, who brought skis to his woodsmen and later started manufacturing skis himself. The skis were soon passed from his employees to the local townsmen, and Jelenice soon became the most significant skiing center. The very first ski club was founded here in 1895.
One of the darkest periods in the history of Jelenice was the 30 Years' War, when most of the town was burned to the ground. In 1938, Nazi Germany annexed the borderland, and the final blow came with the post-war establishment of the communist regime, which abolished most of the local industries. After he tells me about the town's history, Mr. Luštinec takes me around the museum. There are some fine examples of glass and linen work and an exhibition devoted to skiing. You can see ancient skis made from old wooden barrel planks, as well as some finer pieces manufactured according to a Norwegian model. The most valuable objects, however, are kept under lock and key.
Here we have some examples of our ancestors' mastery. This is a sample of a yarn from the beginning of the 19th century. It's more than 200 years old. It's a little technical miracle. 296 meters of this yarn weighs only 1 gram. It was handmade without the use of a spinning wheel. It's the finest flax yarn in the world.
What immediately caught my eye in the small treasury was not the finest yarn, but the colourful nativity seen in the corner of the room. It was made by local teacher Joachim Metelka in 1913, and it took him more than 20 years to complete.
Ten Betlém není co do rozsahu příliš ohromující, je to spíš takové komodní.
The nativity scene is not large, but it is interesting because of the figures and because of its technical aspects. There are altogether 142 figures performing 350 different movements. All the movements are managed by one single mechanism, which is operated by one weight.
Nahoře na hodiny nejdříve odbíjí půlnoc, tedy čas narození Ježíška, pak půlnoc odtroubí ponoc.
The clock strikes midnight, the time when Jesus was born. The midnight watch blows the horn. Angels in the sky start playing local Christmas carols and everything is set in motion. Metelka deliberately added local figures to the scene. There is a man processing flax. There are sheep grazing. A woman walks by with a child on her back, and there is a cuckoo sitting on a palm.
The mechanism in the nativity scene is too fragile to withstand being moved. So if you want to see it with your own eyes, you have one good reason to come to the little town of Jilemnice and enjoy its many other charms.
Ruth Franková and that edition of Spotlight was first broadcast on January 9th of last year. And I'm afraid that's all we have for you today. www.radio.cz is where you will find us online should you like to write to us about anything you heard in the show or simply to offer comments or suggestions. Do get in touch. Our email address is english@radio.cz. This is Danielle Lazarová saying thanks for joining us and goodbye.